This is AC2GS, the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. We'll begin in 5 minutes. Welcome, everyone, joining us here tonight on the Kings County Radio Club's Technical Question and Answer Net. My name is Roy. My call sign is AC2GS, and I will be your net control operator for this informal net. I will be a host, and Bob KD2NVB will be my co-host on this exploration into amateur radio technology. The purpose of this net is to provide a platform for discussion and to offer our answers, as well as promote a conversation among all participants of this net. The club maintains an archive of these technical nets on its web pages. We also offer original articles and reviews on many topics that are also covered during these technical nets. We also publish technical puzzles for our participants to ponder and as a starting off point to discuss important technical concepts. Tonight's technet puzzle is posted on our club's website. The link can be found on the front page of our website in orange color type, but if you would like a simple URL for your web browser to find it, just type into your URL puzzle.kc2rc.com. Also, we will be offering a streaming service for those who cannot receive our repeater signal. Just point your browser to stream.kc2rc.com, and we also offer an Echo Link node available for use. Just point your Echo Link application to the node kc2rc-r. This net is scheduled for the second and fourth Wednesday of each and every month, and all of this information can also be found on our club's website, which is www.kc2rc.com. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club, and as always, an application is readily available on our club's website. No question is simple, no question is too simple, no question is dumb. All wisdom begins with the asking of questions. If you have a question, it deserves to be answered. Our format tonight will be to ask for participants to check in only if they have questions or comments for this technical net. Please give us your first name, your call sign, whether you have a question or a comment. The net will then address each question in order. I will try to provide a cogent answer, and Bob KD2NVB will join in as well. If any other listener has any further facts or opinions, they will be free to break in with the word comment, and when recognized, offer their knowledge or experiences to us all. If anyone has any suggestions for future topics of interest, please let us know either here on the technical net or via email. Our email address is tech@kc2rc.com. And now I would like to introduce my co-host for this net, Bob, KD2NVB.
Hey, Roy. Good evening, everybody. Looking forward to a good net tonight. Roy, you do have quite a bit of hum. Maybe it's the repeater. I mean, completely copyable, but there's a hum, so I'm just letting you know. Back to you.
Okay. Well, I don't know. I don't think there's much I can do about it. You have a bit of a hum also, so maybe the repeater is having a little case of indigestion this night. Nevertheless, let's let the games begin. We're open for business. If anyone has any questions or comments tonight, I hope there's someone does, please hit that push to talk and give me your call sign and say hello. Okay. I was concerned that that might be the case. Well, I'll waste a couple of a minute or two by telling you a short little story. YouTube has been kind of feeding me these weird little YouTubes of people committing crimes lately. You know, speeding violations, sovereign citizen types, all kinds of weird people. And just tonight, I decided to serve me a helping of people who impersonated police officers. I don't know if you know anyone like that. I certainly know someone like that. And sure enough, the first guy on the YouTube that they caught, he had handcuffs, he had radar, he had COPPA radios, he had blotter radios. He had little badges, he had little IDs, all kinds of quaint things that made you think that maybe he might be a cop, although obviously he wasn't. And one of the many things that he promoted was the fact that he's a member of RACES, which all of you hams out there should recognize, that the Radio Amateurs Civil Emergency Service, which doesn't let you flash lights in your car and speed at 90 miles an hour, despite that was what this particular guy was doing. And I happen to know one of those guys, you know, one of those people who has a jacket that has so many vague security patches on his jacket that it's more of a bunch of patches than it is a jacket. And also, he has a service German Shepherd that can track human beings in case they're lost. The guy I know has one too. He was very proud. He called it a cadaver dog because you know it could also sniff out dead bodies. So there's a lot of squirrely people out there, and a couple of them actually have amateur radio licenses, unfortunately. It kind of spoils it for us, but that's life in the big city. Nevertheless, that's my short little funny story for tonight. You know, you could Google it and, you know, just type in guys who were arrested impersonating police officers, and I'm sure you'll come up with that guy from Racy's. Anyway, this continues to be AC2GS, and this continues to be the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. We're open for business. We're here twice a month, you know, and ready for questions. So if anyone has any out there, please hit that push to talk. Well, this is a fine kettle of fish once again. You know, we might consider kind of taking the summer off. If this is the type of activity we get in the spring, you can imagine how busy it's going to be this summer. So it depends on you guys. You don't use it, you lose it type of thing. So, Bob, have you ever known Racy's guys like I know?
Well, I honestly, I don't. I don't know who's in Racy's and who isn't. So if you... I mean, if I found this guy, I wouldn't know which one was the Racy's guy, probably. Unless he's the guy in our club or something.
No, thankfully, I don't think we really have any guys like that. They used to have a website where they love to show pictures of guys with, you know, 112 antennas popping out of their cars, and then they love to take pictures of the internals where it's wall-to-wall radio controls. And, you know, guys who kind of took it just a wee bit too seriously. You can sort of recognize them if you go to Hamventions and such. Again, they're the kind of guys, they're wearing in kind of, I don't know, ready for action jackets, but they're filled with all kinds of emergency patchwork on them. You know, they got the Heart Association, they got the Blue Cross, they got the Red Cross, they got a whole bunch of other things all over the place. Those are usually the guys who, if you follow them back to the car, and I wouldn't suggest it, they have I forget what color lights that flash that, you know, every so often they like to turn them on and go vroom, vroom. So it's a sad group of people, but they're out there, and they're real police groupies. You can kind of tell that they obviously failed a psych evaluation once upon a time.
I really didn't think it was anybody in our club, but yeah, so I get the drift.
Yeah, I mean, one particular guy I'm thinking of is one of those storm chaser groups that transmit the local weather to networks. And once upon a time, I asked the guy, I said, you know, you're located a couple of miles away from Manhattan. It's the communications center of the world. Who the hell wants to know from you what the weather is like? There's probably 150 weather people within a mile of your location. And I don't think he took that well.
Yeah. Roy, did you hear that? I'm sorry, I didn't catch the call sign, but he was trying to check in. I heard it very loud just before you came in on your last transmission.
Okay, let's try it again. If you're out there, please check in.
With you.
I just caught the tail end. It sounded like Chris.
Roger. Yeah, Chris, KD2WOT.
Ah, welcome, Chris. I just took a look at next month's QST, and they actually have a review of that that PCB board that you got.
Oh, I'll have to go online and read the article. It went together pretty good. It seems pretty good. I mean, I haven't done a lot with it, you know, over a wide range of frequencies, but just, you know, in a very small frequency set, I was able to calibrate the VNA, and then, you know, check the calibration with, you know, with various loads on each of the other connectors, and, you know, it all seemed to be consistent, so...
Yeah, very good. I mean, the QST article reviewed it favorably. They tend to review a lot of things favorably. In this particular issue, they reviewed, I don't know if you know about the guys who made a big splash doing these repeater software, repeater lists, so that you could look them up and sort them and do all kinds of fun things. The guy who developed it lives in Long Island. He also... is trying to sell a really, really high-end, it looks like a cell phone, but it has, I think, a UHF, EHF transceiver circuit built into it. So you can, in addition, I think it's an Android-based cell phone that's capable of UHF and VHF. I think the thing costs $1,200. You know, every time I think about that in hams, I say, I don't know too many guys are going to spend $1,200 for a glorified UHF, VHF handy talkie. I know there was a guy at LimeWire who got to use one for free, so he enjoyed using it for free. But I always wonder about, you know, $1,200. And surprisingly, although, you know, you could read around the lines of the AR of the QSD review, where they keep on using the term high end. I guess that's a code word for ridiculously expensive. Interesting article, nevertheless.
But I have seen a product out there, maybe on a YouTube or an advertisement. But it was basically it's a combination, you know, handheld handy talkie with a cell phone built in. I don't know, is it Radio Diddy or one of those?
For whatever reason, I always lock on the name of it, something like FRB1 or something. I don't know. Like I said, this guy's major claim to fame was he kind of cornered the market in repeater lists, so that ARRL kind of turned over. They don't publish their repeater list anymore, or he is the guy who kind of runs that operation for them. But somehow he kind of got their business. And you know, it's, you know, if you really need a very powerful database of repeaters that aren't in service anymore, because no repeater list maintains a list of, you know, active versus retired versus disused repeaters. So that's their major claim to fame. I doubt they make a lot of money off of those overpriced handy talkies. I mean, you know, either people are going to buy the Japanese, you know, Yaesu or ICOM, or they'll buy the Chinese Anytones and what have you. Again, the only guy I ever knew who used one got it for free, which is a great price.
Hey, yeah, I don't see any you know, any major. I mean, other than the uniqueness of it. You know, I don't see any particular benefit to that. You know, having the combined device.
Yeah, I mean, occasionally you bump into guys who just like to brag. There was a guy, he became a silent key a couple of years ago. He was a regular who showed up on LimeWire's repeater. And, you know, if he wasn't talking about getting his wife a new Mercedes or taking a trip next week to Fiji, he once came on and he said that he had just bought, he forgot the model number, he said, but he knew it was the most expensive ICOM that you could buy. So that's what he wanted to share with everyone. You know, he was probably the most infamous braggart in the metropolitan area, as far as I was aware.
Yeah, I think the one that I had seen wasn't like 4G or 5G. It was a satellite based cellular phone along with a VHF UHF.
Oh, that probably would be nice. I don't think this one is a satellite. It's just a cell phone with a transceiver. And it took him years to debug the software because he kind of had to start from scratch because, you know, no one really offers those type of features. You know, but I assume he's pretty good at software because, you know, that's kind of where he shined at the very beginning. It was that website that you went to look up things and sort things. And then he had an application and all kinds of fun stuff. I remember a couple of years ago, I got the strangest door prize at the LimeWire HamFest. He was giving out the occasional card where if you bought 1 year, gave you half off. I didn't need a half of a year. I didn't need a year. You know, there's only about five or six repeaters in the metropolitan area. I guess if I traveled a lot, it might be useful, but it wasn't really useful. If I got it for free, I'd play with it for 6 months, but that isn't the way that he gave it away. You had to pay half for it. So I just folded the card and, you know, put it in the recycle bin.
It's interesting. Let me stand by a moment to see if anyone else is out there. This is KD2WOT.
This is AC2GS. We're open for business here at the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. Anyone has any questions or comments, please hit that push to talk.
AC2GS.
How are you doing tonight?
I have a technical question. I was just wondering, pick your brain just a little bit.
Sure. By the way, Maxim recognized. We'll get to you after after Chris. What is the question, Chris?
So I was actually having a look at my vertical dipole that I cut for 10 meters, and I'm looking at it. I didn't look at it with the VNA in this particular case. I was looking at it with the MFJ 259B antenna analyzer, and you know, taking a look at the natural resistance, capacitance, and inductance, what would you expect would be normal? Quote normal.
Well, sort of by definition, 50 ohms of impedance on resonance.
Yeah, so it's let's say 28380, 28400 range. It was about, let's say, 46, and of course you get some fluctuation here and there, but significant impedance, and most of it inductance, but some capacitance.
Well, practically speaking, you would like to have all of the inductive and capacitive reactants neutralized. That's what antenna tuners are sort of designed for. The impedance should appear to be mostly resistive in nature, not reactive. So that's the sign of a well-tuned antenna, is 50 ohms of primarily resistance with very little reactance. If it's a little too short, then it'll be capacitive. If it's a little too long, it will be inductive. And again, that's why people kind of use their antenna tuners and dial out those stray reactances, so that the, because impedance is a complicated term. It means both the resistance and the reactance added together at right angles, like a Pythagorean theorem. So the closer you are to an impedance that's purely resistive, the better you are, because resistance, radiation resistance, is what hopefully most of it is, and that causes the radio waves to be spewed off of your antenna, which is the way that you want it. Otherwise, it's just shifting phases and not going anyplace.
So, if if you've got significant inductance when we look at it, because it'll show you R, and then XL, and then of course you can look at the inductance and capacitance. So, like I said, the inductance is significant. So if you add capacitance to that in one form or another, you could improve it or diminish the inductance by increasing the capacitance.
Yeah, the way I would call it is it diminishes the reactance. The capacitance is a different thing, and you don't really diminish capacitance or inductance. What you diminish by adding the other component is the reactance that the inductor gives you. So if you have an inductor, it gives you inductive reactance. If you add a capacitor to that circuit, it neutralizes it until you reach a certain amount of capacitance that has capacitive reactance. That's the negative sign. So you can zero out all the reactants by playing around with a value of an inductor and a capacitor. But it's not the inductance or capacitance that's neutralized. It's the inductive reactance and or the capacitive reactance.
Well, after the antenna itself, let's say, two or three feet, where the let's say, ground portion of the antenna ends. It's a vertical dipole. So I've got 10 wraps of coax around a 2-inch PVC.
Yeah.
And that was based on the design for the, I think it's a T2LV type antenna.
Well, if it's in the transmission line, because you said it's see, the trouble is your dipole is kind of sort of part coax and part center line and such. It depends where you're running the coils. If you're running the coils on a coax cable, you're not introducing inductance into your antenna. You're introducing inductance into your common mode transmission line that you don't want to cause an impedance lock of RF current down your transmission line.
Right. Yeah. That's true. The only you're only going to affect the common mode, because essentially the other mode is balanced, right, with the inner and the outer conductor.
Yes, those are differential mode currents, as opposed to the one on the outer surface of the shield, which is common mode current.
So would, let's say, adding, putting a T-connector in and adding a stub, for example, it would introduce capacitance?
Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of different ways of tuning an antenna. You can either tune it at the antenna feed point or at the station, which is the worst place. Or you could put capacitive hats on or inductive coils in the center or towards the antenna feed line. So there's a myriad and plethora of different ways of using different pieces of electronic tricks to adjust the resonance of antennas.
Well, would it be safe to assume, since the R value is very, very close to 50 ohms, that, you know, that the design of the antenna would be, you know, is okay? It seems to be resonant at that frequency.
Yeah, it's a good sign, but again, you want to null out all the reactants, because the reactants will just distort your phases, shift your phases around. The best radiator is very low in reactants. But yeah, 50 ohms of radiation resistance is perfection. You have the most transfer of energy from your transmitter to your antenna, which is one of the many reasons why we try to get things at around 50 ohms of impedance.
But, you know, since the coax itself is essentially two conductors separated by an insulator, you know, I would expect that I would have a high capacitance and not necessarily a high inductance from, you know, just a simple dipole like that.
I'm not quite sure what point you're making. Coaxial cables have kind of lowish capacitance because, you know, think of the distance between the center wire and the shielding. It's not, a fraction of a millimeter. You know, it's a bunch of millimeters separating them. So the capacitance is kind of low. The inductance is kind of low. But they serve to act as a bunched series of circuits that have operationally a 50 ohm impedance rating as you go across them.
But like with a given piece of coax, and you say it's a 50 ohm coax, that 50 ohms is not ohmic resistance, and it's not inductive. It would be capacitive, I would think. No.
No, it's a combination of things, but it's impedance. So it's a complex combination of the capacitive reactants, the inductive reactants, and the actual resistance of the metal. So all of it coming together should be just a 50 ohms, And it has a degree of resistive losses. Those are the attenuation losses of RF. You know, that's why it's never a good idea to get a very thin coax cable, run it 150 feet, and put out, you know, 70-centimeter signals. Most of your RF is going to be dissipated as resistive attenuation loss on those thin coax cables.
Okay, well, thanks. Thanks, Roy. I'll take another look at that, see what I might want to do. So this is KD2WOT. Thanks. Thank you, AC2GS.
You're welcome, Chris. Thank you for participating, as always. I really appreciate it. Maxim, you got a question tonight?
Hey, Roy. This is KD2VEA. I was just actually, you started answering my question a little bit, sending for my general, and I was just kind of constantly wondering, why 50 ohms? Like, what's so special about 50 ohms? Why not 25? Why not 75? Why 50?
Well, that's a very good question, and it's been asked before and been answered before, so I'll do it again, because there's always new people joining after I describe something like this. There are two things that coax cable impedances have an effect upon. One is attenuation loss. So all coax cables will have some ohmic loss of power. The optimal impedance in order to have the least amount of loss is approximately 75 ohms. This is why cable TV uses 75 ohm coax, because the most important thing to them is to kind of separate the repeaters as widely as possible, and for that you have to get the least amount of loss. So they have quad-shielded, ultra-low loss, 75 ohm impedance coaxial cables. The other characteristic that impedance has an effect on is the power handling capacity of the coaxial cable. And the optimum impedance for the most power handling capacity is about 32 to 35. Cable TV doesn't really care. They don't run kilowatts of power into your cable TV. So again, they favored the optimizing of the lowest attenuation and went with 75 ohms. Hams kind of wanted a compromise. They wanted to have their cake and eat it too. They wanted to carry as much power as they possibly could. And so they decided to split the difference between about 35 and 75 and make the impedance of ham transmission line to be 50 ohms. So that's the story. And once that happened, all the manufacturers designed their transmitters, not particularly that they had internally 50 ohms of impedance, but that they were designed optimally to transfer as much power efficiently when they were given a 50 ohm load.
That's interesting. So it does sound like it's a little bit of a decision and mechanism. Has anyone actually ever made radios for 25 ohms, let's say, or like 35 ohms, that is?
No. To my knowledge, at least in the modern age, no. In the olden days, prior to solid-state transmitters, so those are vacuum tube transmitters. Vacuum tubes operate significantly different than transistors. And vacuum tubes are high impedance, voltage-oriented high impedance devices. So all voltage-based transmitters had to have an impedance adjusting, tuning circuit. Usually it was a PI network. And if you see the old radios of the vacuum tube era, they all had the same kinds of controls that modern-day linear amplifiers that are vacuum-based have. They would have PI networks. They would have these big knobs and meters that you would adjust the voltage and the current and the loading and all kinds of fun stuff. So up until the advent of solid state, which is works a completely different way, and you can just design them to be approximately 50 ohms, it's very problematic to do that with vacuum tubes. So before solid state, the impedance of those transmitters before they got to the PI network were thousands of ohms. Since solid state, they pretty much designed them all to operate at 50 ohms. I don't know of any that use weird ones because you can't even get coax cables as far as I'm aware. You can get 50 ohms, you can get 75 ohms. That's about it. So you have to kind of figure out whether you want to have a circuit designed for one or the other. Although I knew really great hams who got bargains on cable TV transmission lines and bought, you know, 1,000 feet of quad shielded 75 ohm. He was a little bit off, but he felt that the incredible amount that he saved and the decrease in attenuation loss made up for it. But that's it. Just 75 or 50. You know, it's like the old thing about the Ford cars. You can get it any color as long as it's black.
That's interesting and fascinating. Attenuation loss, that gets worse with higher frequencies. Would you argue that it's less relevant on low frequencies?
Yeah. Again, it sort of depends. I mean, it doesn't go away entirely. One of the reasons why some people still use open line is because its attenuation loss at low frequencies is negligible. So you can have a completely non-resonant center-fed sort of dipole. They call them doublets. The losses of matching at your shack are not that much. So you could theoretically have a terribly non-resonant center-fed doublet rather than going into coax cable, going into open line, feeding into your shack with your antenna tuner, and your antenna tuner can adjust it with much less loss than it would if you were using a transmission line as a coax as a transmission line.
Got it. Fascinating. All right. Well, I'll keep studying for my general. Here's the other question for you. Are you going to come join us at the field day?
Probably not. I don't know. I tell people that my conception of field day is camping with radios. And I never went camping. I never had any inclination to go camping. And I don't know. It just doesn't do anything for me personally. You know, no hard feelings. I mentioned a while ago the guy with the who had the quad-shielded cable transmission lines and such. He was a very good friend of one of the great hams of our club, Mel. I think it was K2KEY. He passed away the same month that I joined the club. And because he was good friends with him, Dick K2RIW used to kind of wander around different groups field day and tell antenna stories. And he used to do it for Kings County Radio Club. Fortunately, when Mel passed away, he scratched us off his list. But, you know, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. I sometimes feel a little bit guilty, sometimes not. I just, you know, field day was never my big thing. And it was very weird in that, I think I told the story before, that when I first joined Kings County Radio Club, pretty much the only thing these guys did was schedule field day. They seemed to start around July and, of course, end in June. And, you know, finally we kind of kicked them out of that habit.
Well, too bad. I was kind of hoping to have a real technical session, but we'll probably connect with you over the air during field day. That should be interesting. I'm going to bring all of my equipment and see what I can do. Meanwhile, we'll see how many people actually show up this time.
Yeah, I hope things are a little bit more active than the last few years. I think COVID kind of knocked the stuffing out of a lot of things, but hopefully people will slowly return to normal conditions. I look forward to the 10-meter Sunday net. I hope I get some contacts for both people at the field day and people operating satellite for field day. And I sent out that notice. I'm sure you got a copy of it that you wanted. And I even pruned the Discord server a little bit, added some new people after the email popped up on Discord and said hello.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Definitely email good. I think a couple of people joined Discord after we sent that note. It'll be good to see. Looking forward to it. All right, this is KD2VA. I'm probably going to fall asleep. I'm being cuddled by two little monsters who are snoring nicely away. So if I don't talk to you later today, have a good night.
Okay, likewise, pleasant dreams, and it shouldn't be that much of a problem to study. I don't know. I give advice. Everyone gives advice. They're all a little different. You know, some people might have thought that I kind of went into a lab and proved all the theories or something. Just memorize the questions and the answers. If you're really interested in how things work, the technical end, your curiosity will lead you there nevertheless. You don't have to prove it on the exam. You just have to sort of prove that you read the questions before and can answer them. That's all. I mean, I went over it so many times I was sick and tired of it. I could tell you some questions, I could give you the answer by reading the third word in the question. It was just, you know, that's just the way I approached it. It worked for me, and it didn't kind of ruin my ability to understand the technology after the fact.
With a comment.
Yeah, hey Bob, do you have a comment?
For Max, I mean, if you want to check this out, I really loved it. The way I got all three of my tests, I studied this place called Ham Tests Online. It cost, I know when I did it, it was about $30 for each one, or $25. I maybe went up a little. I just checked, they're still around. Check it out. I mean, maybe you'll like it. I think it made it fun to study for it, and you will learn stuff while you're doing it. And they have these, you know, practice quizzes. They have a lot of different things. And it really worked for me, so you can check that out. It's just called Ham Test Online. So take that for what it's worth. Back to Ned.
Okay, I think Maxim has gone napping with the little ones. Yeah, I mean, there's more than one way. You know, there are some people who like books. There are other people who like very regimented, you know, lesson plans. I just preferred rote for the purpose of this particular thing. You know, I mean, you know, the internal medicine boards were a completely different thing. I felt I needed to understand them. But for something like this, where they give you the questions and they give you the answers, you know, I thought the best approach was just to memorize the damn thing. It's not like it requires an enormous memory. They weren't really particularly difficult concepts, but different strokes for different folks. Whatever works for you.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I just, you know, I learned a lot just studying for it. I mean, maybe because you might have already known a lot of stuff before you started, and I didn't. And then they make it fun. They have diagrams and, you know, explaining it. And if you want to look more into it, which I did sometimes, they had links, you know, to other things. What you could or you could do or not do, you know, and you know, I liked it. So, for me, that was a lot more fun than just memorizing. I think it's probably easier as well, because I wasn't just memorizing. I was kind of getting some clue into why also. Back to you.
Okay, like I said before, different people have different ways of dealing with it. I had read the ARRL handbook back in the 70s, so, you know, I sort of knew electronics, I sort of knew schematics, you know, I didn't remember a lot of the laws and rules and regulations and particular practices, because they're all arbitrary. They don't fundamentally have anything to do with how technology actually works. But, you know, like I said, I just found it easier to sit there with the iPad and go through the questions, find out what I got wrong, look at the question again, look at the right answer, and then do it over and over and over again. You know, I mean, some of the pools are only, what, 300 questions? So it doesn't really take that long to do 300 questions. But, you know, again, whatever works for you.
I have a question about, my microphone's buggy again, and without the microphone, I still get those, like, beep, per-chunk beeps, whatever you call them, every time someone ends a transmission. But with the microphone, I also hear clicking from my radio, but what I don't know is whether it makes a difference to other people, whether they hear more noise and stuff when my mic's plugged in, or if it's just me hearing it. do you have any idea? Back to you.
I think it's a little bit of both. The clicks add to it. I think the best way to describe it is something called a squelch crash, which is a timing problem. That you know, maybe when everyone goes up to the repeater, they might want to adjust the settings for the controller and the radio. There might be a slightly more optimal settings for that. But yeah, it's a squelch crash. I had to kind of tweak the timing of EchoLink because it was producing a feedback loop. This squelch crash would trigger the Vox, which would then trigger the squelch crash, which again would trigger the Vox, you know, until the end of time. So thankfully, it hasn't gotten any worse.
Right, but do you also hear the click, like right then? There's no click here when I don't have the mic plugged in, but when it's plugged in, I hear this clicking. I wonder if you hear just the crash thing, or are you also hearing clicking?
Sometimes. It sort of depends. But yeah, I hear a clicking going on in the background. It's not as bad as the crash.
Right. I think it's also crashing more, like not instead of just doing it kerchunk once, it's like somebody's doing it over and over about 3 or 4 times. This mic thing is just, I must have damaged the plug, the jack. The jack's the female part, right? That part, the part that's the radio head, because even with the new mic, it's still weird. So I must have bent some connectors or something.
Yeah, that's very possible, and that's a bit of a pain in the ass to fix. I know a guy who, and it happens to almost every third guy who has a PlayStation, he basically had the wire hooked up and he tripped over the wire and he ripped out the jack. And those things are surface mounted, you know. It's not like the good old days where you just put a couple of wires together and jumper wires. They're surface mounted. They got a heat shield on them. They're a pain in the backside to remove and replace.
Right. Yeah. So it's like so much harder to fix yourself. I suppose it's cheaper for the people to mass produce them or something. Or there are probably other advantages, but harder to self-service. Right. Just like cars now with all these computer stuff. It's not like the old days. It was simple to at least do some kinds of self-repair on your car. Same kind of thing, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, if you pull up a YouTube and see how all of this electronics is automated, no one touches anything. There are these wheels filled with parts that get dispensed on these little probes that place them in the correct position, and then they're all wave soldered together. It's very efficient, and there's no manual labor. So, you know, if you happen to have a $40,000, $50,000, board installation setup, it's not that difficult. But if you need to remove individual separate parts, you end up paying a technician, you know, hundreds of dollars for one piddly little component.
Right, so somebody just says, well, you might as well just buy a new radio or whatever it comes to that. It can be terribly wasteful, as well as wasting your money. It's also throwing all this stuff into the landfills or what have you also.
Yeah, I mean, this guy with the PlayStation bought himself a replacement jack, and when he figured out how impossible it was going to be, he basically just went on eBay, I think, and sold it for parts.
Right. Yeah, this mic is really acting up. Every time sometimes when you're talking, I pull the plug out, and then I put it back in when I talk, and it's just like going nuts with this clicking and stuff.
My memory, isn't there 2 mic inputs for the IC7100? Have you ever considered using the other input?
There's only one. There's only one at least with that kind of plug. I'd have to have some other kind of mic or adapter, if that's what you mean, but only one. The one next to it is the cable that connects the head to the main unit of the radio.
No, I'm pretty sure that there is one on the head, too.
Yeah, I'm using the one on the head. There's one on the radio, but unfortunately the way my stuff's laid out, then my mic, I don't know if the cord would reach. It would be really, like, clumsy and inconvenient to be... The radio is set back just the way I have it on a shelf. I'm on a computer table that's, a foot or so in front of that. I could try it, but it probably is on the radio body. I guess that's what you mean.
Yeah, and I think it's something like an RJ-12, so get an extension cord. I've used them before with the 7100. I think that's a rather simple solution.
Okay, I didn't know about that. It never occurred to me, and I completely forgot that there is a mic jack or plug, what's the right word for that, on the main body as well as the head, because I've always just used it on the head, and you know, like I said, I just totally forgot that there was another one on the body, which is way back here on the shelf.
Yeah, they're jacks. Females are jacks, males are plugs.
Okay, got it. Yeah, that makes sense if you think about it. Although Jack's a male's name, but whatever. Okay, so yeah, I never thought of that. So an extension, you think it's, what'd you say, RJ-12? And I can double check with the manual and the radio or Google it or what have you.
Yeah, I mean, just check on it. I don't recall having to go through too much hell to get an extension cord for it. Again, it's doable. It's a hell of a lot cheaper than having some guy solder in a new jack into the chassis.
Right, right. Yeah, I never even knew that they made extension cords. I mean, it makes sense that they would, but it's just something that never crossed my mind. So thank you for that. I will look that up.
Okay, very good. I wish you good luck with it. You know, I mean, people make their own RJ connectors. I used to make mine for Ethernet all the time. It's just cheaper to kind of get some pre-made, but I still have the empty jacks, all kinds. I forget all of them. There's RJ-42, there's RJ-6, RJ-12, RJ-14. But, I mean, they're all out there. You can get them on Amazon if you got a big problem. I'm sure there's guys on eBay who put them together for not a ridiculous amount of money. So it's a possibility. You know, look at the back of it, take a good look, see if it's something that's, you know, count how many pins it is so you can figure out what kind of a connector it is. And probably it's a 6-pin connector. But check it out.
Will do. But your guess was the guess that you had for the size was what, RJ-12? Is that what you said?
I think so, but it's probably been about 6 or 7 years since I've been back connecting the wires there. I mean, that's one of the things I think I use that connection to hook up my 7100 to do some of its little other things that I had wired in. But that was years ago, so I haven't really looked lately. But it was definitely an RJ connector, and it's not a big problem finding RJ connectors. You know, sometimes DIN connectors can give you a bit of a headache, but yeah, RJ connectors are kind of, you know, except for the fact that those little tabs break eventually.
Yes, that was the cause of the whole thing originally. It broke on the first microphone, and then I guess I should have done something about it right away, and probably the thing wobbling in there kind of messed up the jack. So that's where I am now.
Yeah, I've been there. I've tried those replacements when the plastic tag breaks off. They sell things that you can strap onto the broken ones to sort of work. But I've yet to see a model that actually works well. I've seen some interesting 3D models for them. One of these days I'll print one out and just test it out and see if they've gotten the design has gotten better.
Got it. You know, I should try looking for that jack, or plug, I should say, of the jack behind. I could do it right now, so I wouldn't have this clicking. I would have to be kind of like stretching my cord, but it'd probably reach. I got to turn this thing around. It's kind of tricky to do right now.
Yeah, it sort of depends. I mean, there are guys who just kind of set up their rigs on the kitchen table when they're operating, and then they just put them off to the side for them to kind of flip things over and around. Is nothing, but, you know, mine is kind of stacked on top of each other, and I really dislike the occasional need for me to get to the bottom thing on the stack, and I have to take apart my whole TV appliance rack from, you know, the 80s or the 90s that I use as the stand that all my ham gear works on. Then I have all the control functions on the desk with the computers.
Yeah, it wouldn't take me that long, but I, you know, if someone else comes on, like William or whoever, and you start talking to somebody else, in a few minutes I could do this.
Okay, we'll see what happens. I mean, it's already 10 o'clock, so chances are everyone's going to kind of run out of steam. But nevertheless, I am AC2GS. This is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net, and we're still open for business. We don't close until everyone's finished with any question or comment that they might have. So if there's anyone out there with any questions or comments, please hit that push to talk.
Kilo Delta 2, Mike Delta Victor with a comment.
Yes, Eugene.
Good evening, Roy. I just had a comment about the IC7100. It's a RJ45. It's a standard Ethernet connector. I have the 7100. So the plug in the back of the radio, as well as the head, is a standard RJ45. So what can be done is you can either make your own, or you can use a standard patch cable and the female-to-female coupler, and that should work fine.
Very good. Thank you, Eugene. Yeah, I wasn't sure about that. I know the wire that connects the body to the head is that connector, but I didn't remember if the microphone was. So that makes life a lot easier. I mean, you can get one of those in about 3 minutes on Amazon.
Absolutely. They're very easy to make, and I actually, when I switched to Heilmic, I had to make my own adapter because it came with the standard 8-pin Kenwood connector. So I took a patch of Ethernet cable and then did the female Kenwood connector, and then I was able to connect the microphone together. So yeah, it's standard RJ45, very simple.
Okay, very good. I mean, not all of us have a crimping tool. I do, you do. I assume Bob doesn't. But again, that shouldn't be a real problem. Amazon's dirt cheap. You can buy whatever length of RJ45 Ethernet cable you want, and a coupler probably costs $8-$9. I haven't priced them recently, but I have them on my system here. So again, a relatively inexpensive solution to a problem.
KD2NBB, I just Googled RJ45 extension cable male to female, and they're $10 to $20, so some of them are 25 feet, but yeah, one 7.5 feet, that might work. Yeah, looks easy.
There's even a cheaper option. If you have a standard patch cable with the two male ends, you can get a coupler for like $2-$3. I mean, sometimes they sell them at the 99-cent store, so it'll be a couple of bucks, or Home Depot, if there's one nearby, they also sell them for like $3, I believe, and you can get any length of cable. They'll also be like probably around $10 or so.
Okay, looks like an extension for somewhere less than $10. I got a page here, I have to look through it. I don't think I have the male to male. I think I'll just get this male to female. It's cheap enough. Some of them are only, in fact, I'm looking at the one that's like $12 and it's 25 feet. I don't want 25 feet. I want maybe 3 feet. I'll settle for 5 or 6 if that's the shortest.
Well, that's the beauty of having your own box and crimper. You can do any of them. But yeah, they're relatively cheap. Back to you.
But thanks again. So you know that it's 45. I can double check it too, but that's the size for the 7100. You said you got one, so I guess you know.
Looking at it right now, and I've made the connectors for it, so that there's no, I don't have any other connectors, so it could be only that. The only time I couldn't make the connectors when I was making the extension cord for the Yaesu FDM100, it has a 6-pin instead of the, so it's RJ whatever version, it's a 6 instead of an 8, and that one I couldn't do. I had to purchase that because I didn't feel like getting a crimper and all that stuff. It would be way more too expensive. But yeah, this one's standard.
Good. Thanks again. Yeah, I'll just do that. It's just something that never crossed my mind. I told Roy, I'd literally forgotten that the main unit of the radio had another mic jack because I just never used it. I've had this thing for 6 years.
Same here. And the convenience is great. The 7100, it's pretty unique because you have the head that has the keyer connection, the microphone, the speaker. You can switch it between speaker and the headphone. It would change the impedance. So this is a pretty good radio.
Yeah, I like it a lot too. It'll be a little less convenient to have this extension going to that thing, but it's not a big deal. It's certainly like a lot less hassle than, I don't know, like trying to get this jack fixed on the head.
For the given circumstances, it's pretty much a saving situation because you just run it through and you don't have to do anything. So, yeah, it'll do the trick.
Right. So, yeah, because you probably heard all this already, but I had an old mic and then the little clip thing broke and then I just didn't deal with it and the thing was wobbling around and it must have damaged the jack or, just bent things around. And so I finally bought a new microphone, but it's kind of like too late in a sense. So there you go. So I'll get the extension cord and everything will be cool.
Awesome. Good luck. And I'll pass it back to Roy. This is Kilo Delta 2, Mike Delta Victor.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Eugene. And a little bit of a warning, I wouldn't go for things like the 25-foot because you'd never kind of know what a resistive loss is going to do to your microphone signal. So keep it a reasonable length. And I mean, theoretically, if you have this thing about it being plugged into the back of the control head, you could just parallel the wire that's coming from the control head to the body and just have the extra length come out from the back of the control head. So functionally, it'll look identical. And, you know, only if you kind of trace back the control head wire will you notice that there's two sets of wires instead of one.
Roy, that's brilliant. Why didn't I think of that? Yeah, and maybe I would have. But, yeah, so I'll make if I can get one that's like, I got a 16-foot for the head, which works so I can take it into my other room of my bedroom of my two-room apartment rather than 11-foot. So if I got like a 16 or maybe 17 or 18-foot, maybe that would make a lot of sense. But then I still have that flexibility of being able to take it into the bedroom if I wanted to, et cetera. All right. Very good. Thank you, both you guys. Back to the net.
Okay, you're welcome. If you're going to kind of have longish cable wire, you might go for not necessarily the premium price cable, but something around the middle price cable, because you don't want something with a real thin set of wires, you know, running 14, 16 feet or so. I don't know if you need shielded cables. You know, it depends on how much money you want to spend / waste, and if you're a belt and suspenders and staple gun sort of guy.
Right. I guess I could lash them together with any old thing, like the two wires, like something like electrical tape or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, well, you could use electrical tape. They also, Amazon sells material that you can kind of wrap cables together. It's aesthetically a little bit more pleasing, perhaps. Yeah, whatever works for you. Yeah, and then there are plastic spiral wraps that you just kind of wind them around the multiple cables to keep them nice and tight and clean together.
Heck, I could even use these things that I've been buying, this pita bread. And it has a certain thing that holds the plastic transparent bag shut, and it's, you know, the kind of harder thing that I think it would be just the right gauge for that, instead of not the cheap ones that are paper around a wire, but they're like plastic or something. I could probably save those up and use a couple of those.
Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of options you have. You could do wire wraps. You could do spiral flex plastic. You could do fabric sheaths. You could do carbon sheaths. You know, it depends upon how aesthetically pleasing and how much money you want to waste. But, you know, it doesn't really require that much to keep two wires from tangling with each other.
The thing you mentioned, somebody wrapping the wires, and I mean, I just want to see a name for it so I can Google it and look up and see what the heck it is, and see if it's interesting me or not.
I don't have a particular name for them. If you just Google cable management, you'll see a slew of different options. You'll see the plastic spiral wraps. You'll see the weaves. You'll see the ties. You'll see all of those things. So just look up cable management.
Okay, I just hit search with cable management. You're right. There's a bunch of stuff here. So in my own time, I'll look this over. Great. Thanks.
You're welcome. Well, let's throw out a call again. It's 10:13. We may be going to the TechNet bustle any second now, but if not, if anyone has any other questions or comments to make for tonight, please hit that push to talk. Okay, I will take that as a no thank you, which brings us to the TechNet puzzle for tonight. Relatively simple one. There's no illustration. It's all text, and I'll read it for everyone. It says, batteries have a physical property known as their internal resistance. one effect of this is 2, and then you have 4 different choices. So they're asking what one of the effects of internal resistance of batteries is. So your choice A is it increases the electromotive force of the battery in proportion to the current drawn. B is it acts as an independent parallel resistance to the load on the battery. C is it increases the voltage potential difference at a battery terminal as more current is drawn. And D is it reduces the voltage potential difference at a battery terminal as more current is drawn. Would anyone like to hazard a guess?
NVB, it'll be a complete guess. But I'll hazard a guess. I don't know, maybe increase voltage potential, or it might increase, I'm just thinking, if you increase the resistance, it takes more voltage pressure to push it through. So I don't know, does it increase the voltage potential difference, or I got this all wrong? Back to you.
I'm not 100% sure what your answer was. Was it A, B, C, or D?
Say C. I'll just guess C. It could be right or it could be completely wrong.
Okay, anyone else out there listening who would like to hazard a guess, please?
This is KD2WOT. I would guess D.
Okay, very good. Chris is right. Bob, I'm sorry you're wrong. Internal resistance of a battery acts as if there's a resistor in series with a battery. So as you increase the current draw, it acts as a voltage divider, so it divides more and more of the voltage. So effectively what happens is as you increase the current going through the internal resistor, the voltage division gets greater and greater, and you end up lowering the voltage output of the battery outside of the battery, you know, the poles. So the answer is D. It reduces the voltage potential difference at the battery terminals as more current is drawn.
Okay. I just don't understand this stuff, but it's okay. Back to that.
It's okay, Bob. You don't necessarily have to. It's not going to really impact in your enjoyment of the hobby. It's more, you know, what's happening under the hood type of thing. So no problems there. Anyone with any other comments or questions or answers or anything before we call it a night?
KD2WOT.
Yes, Chris.
So, Roy, relative to the YouTubes, it seems like, you know, anything that you watch, it'll kind of serve you more of that, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I understand. There's a couple of things going on. Sometimes it just kind of throws you something from no place. It's kind of random. But if you take a sniff, then you go down a rabbit hole. And occasionally it gets rather tiresome because occasionally, you know, people from the technical net and other things will send me YouTubes. And I will play the YouTubes, and then I will be served up a lot of the stuff based on that YouTube. So, of course, you can go back to your history and erase it so that it doesn't do that anymore. But, yeah, that's a part of the algorithm, is that it tries to figure out new niches based upon your viewing history.
Absolutely. I mean, it tries, I guess the algorithm tries to lead you down a path. That it thinks is kind of in line with whatever it is you responded to. In my case, actually, I was interested in installing solar panels on my home, so I started watching videos about solar panels, which then kind of brought me into the preppers, which then kind of brought me into ham radio.
Well, I mean, then I guess we should all be thankful for YouTube algorithms. I have occasionally, the political type of YouTubes are kind of centrist, a centrist left. Every so often, I get, they pick some kind of semi-fascist YouTube for me. And I can't go back to my viewing history and erase things because there was nothing to erase. So then I use that magic button that says, I don't want to see this site ever again, which works rather nicely.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I had somebody that, is different politics than mine, let's just say, and, started, sending me stuff from, off, and you know, once you watch one, it tends to serve you more and more and more of that. So I try to avoid them if I can.
Yeah, I tend to kind of nuke anything that's extreme, except, you know, things that mock extreme things, I'm fine with, to a degree. But when it stops mocking and it's taking itself seriously, that's where I reach for that button that says, don't show me this site ever again. And, you know, sometimes I kind of tolerate. There are there are YouTubes that just kind of insult modern television shows that I find tedious as well for slightly different reasons, and in moderation I find their scorn amusing, but if you go kind of too down their rabbit hole, you get into a whole other mess as well. So, you know, there are some sites where I kind of limit their you know, I pass a lot of their sites and don't click on them, and their YouTube algorithm is smart enough to diminish the frequency of those YouTubes showing up on my list of suggested ones. So I find YouTube's algorithms approximately reasonable. I know how to kind of control them. At least I feel I do. So, you know, that's, you know. But you could easily fall down rabbit holes. I know perfectly sane people who have been lost in Facebook. You know, their sense of reality is not the same as mine anymore.
Yeah, no, that's a real, that is a real danger. So moderation, I think moderation is the key, and, you know, recognizing when, you know, it's taking you a place that you, you know, don't want to go for whatever reason. So, okay, well, that's my comment. Thanks again, Roy, for doing the net.
Ah, you're welcome, Chris, and I appreciate your participation into these nets. That makes or breaks them. You know, this is not a monologue type of a thing, but, you know, I do wish the educational system spent more time teaching people critical thinking, you know, where you don't just kind of soak up whatever you hear and go with it. You kind of mull it around and look under it and see if there's some deep flaws within it. So I think that's one of the major problems with modern-day education system. You know, sometimes it's just too much sheer rote and not enough kind of being able to dissect an argument and reduce it to its basic premises and really investigate it. But yeah, that's my two cents worth.
Yeah, very, very true. Very true. I don't think they teach any, you know, critical thinking or, you know, it's just crazy. And you mentioned, you know, regular TV is just, I don't know. I mean, you know, you catch some of those shows that they just don't appeal to me.
Yeah, unfortunately, they're not really designed to appeal to either of us. The demographics for advertisements, other than in cable news stations, in which it's a lot of pharmaceutical products and blue pills and such. But in general, they're really looking for the 18 to 35. Anyone past that is done and over. So they're not looking for our money anymore for some strange reason.
True, very true. So, okay. Well, I think I'm going to get ready to go to bed. So I'm going to say 7-3s, Roy, and Bob out there, and Max, if you're still around, and whoever else. So I'll say 7-3s. This is KD2WOT.
Okay, 73, Chris. Once again, I am AC2GS with the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. We're probably going to call it a night soon. If anyone else out there has any questions, comments, or what have you, closing statements before I shut it all down, this is about the best time to do it, because, you know, if you wait another minute, couple of minutes, they'll all be gone.
November 1 uniform, Foxtrot, Oscar, in and out, just supporting the net. I'm at work QTH.
Ah, great to hear you. I haven't talked to you since 10 meter net, maybe about a year ago. I hope everything is well with you.
Hey, roger that, boys. A couple of up and downs health-wise, but so far everything is good. The family is good. Hope all is well on your end there.
Yeah, everything's peachy keen. No complaints here. So it's great to hear from you. I was a little concerned by, you know, you kind of mentioned that you were looking to get more into the hobby again, and then all of a sudden you disappeared. So I hope you'll be able to come by someday when we're doing the 10-meter net. We could always use some additional participants.
Roger that, Roy. Will do, will do. I got to get back to work here. They're calling me on the phone, but it was great to be able to hear you and speak to you quickly there. And I'll stay in touch, Roy. I'll stay in touch and try to get to back to what I had planned there. Of course, it's a hobby and a science for this beautiful hobby of ham radio that we do there, but family and health comes first always, and we get to play and experiment later there. Great to hear you. I'm going to go QRT, and I'll catch you in the near future. 7-3, be well, be safe, Roy, from N1UFO.
Likewise, 73, be well, and I hope to talk to you soon down the line. Once again, AC2GS here. If anyone else has any closing comments to make, make them now.
A2NVP. Just wondering, I'm finding cables that are either too long or too short. I suppose I should get some that are a little too long and just kind of, I'm talking about the, you know, the extension for my mic cable. So, I guess you can get it a little too long and just kind of loop it out on the back end or something.
Yeah, you could always work with something that's a little too long, but, you know, you can't really lengthen something that's too short unless you want to go buy more couplers and things. So, yeah, try and make it a little bit longer than you need it. Try and make it reasonably good quality so it's not, you know, AWG 36, diameter wire running your signal.
So far, if I want, it's 25 feet, but that's a bit more than a little too long, but maybe I'll find one that's 20 to 18 or something. That would be cool.
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of time. The problem is that something like that comes in so many different lengths from so many different vendors. That you got to kind of go through a pile of sales before you find the length that suits you the best.
Right. Yeah, I'll have to play with Google searches and such. So, all right. Great, Roy. 73, great net. I'll just be back in a couple weeks. Back to you. 73.
Okay, very good. This net has been brought to you by the Kings County Radio Club. Our club is an ARRL affiliated club based in Brooklyn, New York, and we meet on the first Wednesday of each and every month. Our next meeting will be July 3rd, which will be held by teleconference. Club members will be emailed with the details of logging into the meeting. Non-members wishing to join a general club meeting can email me, AC2GS, with some form of identification for the required link. Although our meetings informally begin at 7 p.m., our formal regular general meeting starts at 8 p.m., and continues until anywhere from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m., depending upon the number of points that are covered. We have a weekly 2-meter club net every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. on this repeater. This technical net meets on the second and fourth Wednesday of each and every month at 9 p.m., and we also sponsor a 10-meter net every Sunday morning at 11 o'clock a.m. on 28.380 or roundabout upper sideband. We offer an audio stream of our KC2RC repeater on the Internet as well as our 10-meter net. Just type into your browser stream.kc2rc.com. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club. And as always, an application is readily available on our club's website. If you would like to contact the hosts of this technical net, simply address your email to tech@kc2rc.com. We maintain an active website at www.kingscountyradioclub.com or www.kc2rc.com, which offers archives of this technical net, amateur radio news, original articles, and technical forums. Please visit our website and participate. Our website hosting services are generously donated by a local Brooklyn-based web hosting company, 3Aliens Web Hosting, who we would like to thank. As the great philosopher Jimi Hendrix once said, knowledge speaks, but wisdom listens. So try to listen a bit more and talk a bit less. Well, we're rolling this all up, but we'll be back to do it again June 26th, and you're all welcome to join us. Thanks to all the people that participated tonight, especially my co-host, Bob KD2NVB. Without you guys, I would just be talking to myself, which wouldn't be fun at all. So this is Roy AC2GS going clear and getting the heck out of here. Have a great week. Be well. Stay safe. We'll talk to you down the line.